Zhang Jian was a master artist of interior glass painting in the employ of the Felita Company in the city of Tianjin in the province of Hebei in the country of China. Or at least he had been for many years. His worthy hands could no longer hold the fine brushes to make the delicate strokes inside snuff bottles, glass balls, or vases. His hands now were only good enough for the rough brooms and the cleaning towels. He could have lived humbly on this pension, but there was no one home to share his tea, and the days were long. That starts Priscilla McCaffrey's latest book, Christmas Blossoms, which is a fantastic book and will end out our short series on children's books. This book is a little different. It's for older children. It's a chapter book. The illustrations are absolutely stunning. They're by artist Gwyneth Thompson-Briggs, which we'll be talking about a little later. I was really delighted to talk with Priscilla about this book. It's unique. It's aimed for children, maybe a little older, but to sit with a family. And it tells a story set in China in the modern times with a craftsman who shares his Catholic faith in the littlest of ways in communist China. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Michael Litchens with CatholicExchange.com. Today's guest, Priscilla McCaffrey, is an author. She's also another podcaster with a degree from Thomas Aquinas College, as well as St. John's University. She has a apostolate called Catholic Media Apostolate, which you can find in the links in our show notes. She shares a lot of great information where this story came from. And of course, we continue to talk about what it is to write children's books and why are we so intrigued by telling the story of the Nativity. I want to thank you all for joining me this week. This was lovely to be able to do 3 episodes in 1 week. I'm going to try to do a schedule similar, a little more busy. Next week it's going to be a few more solo episodes before we hit Christmas. Then I'll return to the interviews after a short break. Thank you all so much for joining me. Let's join the interview with Priscilla. Meet me at the end. Alright, and as many of you heard here on Catholic Exchange, I have Priscilla McCaffrey here to talk to us about her new book, Christmas Blossoms, which is a lovely illustrated book, and we don't get to talk to too many folks about children's books except during Christmas. So Priscilla, can you tell us a little bit about how you first got into writing books for children?
Well, this is my first book, and it is, I would say it's for families. And yes, it would be for children, but they have to be around 11 or 12 years old, because there are some topics in it that are a little bit sad, and it would be good for them to talk to their parents about, because this book, this very unusual Christmas book, is about a man in China. Now, I have always been interested in Christmas books. I love the season. I love all the visuals of the season. So I'm always looking for a beautiful and different Christmas story myself, and I've always given Christmas books to my godchildren, so I decided I think I'd like to write one, because I'm not finding books that I really love. And of course there are certain tropes, certain themes we hear all the time, people being visited by spirits, and I love A Christmas Carol, but that theme kind of gets used a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So this is something, this is a story that came about because I was, for two reasons. I gave my daughter a Christmas gift many years ago, and it was a lovely little ornament, and it was, I don't usually spend more than a few dollars for an ornament, and this was a little more expensive. But over the years, I've been so pleased that I got it. It's a lovely glass ornament, and inside it's painted stallions, and she loved horses at the time. So I just thought it was a lovely little thing. And then after a while, I thought, you have to have some skill to be able to do this kind of painting. So I researched. And I found out that in China there's an ancient craft of interior glass painting. And it's actually very precise. You could go on Google and look into it. It's very fascinating. But nevertheless, it's this artistry that's done for a very little thing. And so I've always, you know, so I appreciate that there are certain people with a unique talent, and their work is never going to get high accolades. They're just doing something lovely that they're skilled at doing. And I appreciate that kind of artistry. My father was an artist, and I know that an artist, well, he's just going to work at his art whether anyone buys it or not. It's for the love of the art. So, and then the other thing was, working in my mind, was the fact that so much of our Christmas paraphernalia, religious and secular, is made in China, in communist China. So I wonder how or what these artisans are thinking, and the factory workers, when they're putting out thousands of little babies in a manger, and Rudolph and the star and the angels, and, you know, how do they put that all together? So I just decided to work with an artisan who would know what Christmas was really about, and who would talk to his fellow factory workers about Christmas.
And the main character, Zhang Jian, this is a very China-centric book with the art, the person. Can you tell us a little bit about the story?
Yes. It's, in a way, it's an unfolding of a man's life. It's not, there's not a storyline per se, but it starts off with my character, Jian. He's an older man in a factory, and he had been a very talented artist, and he was known in the factory as having very successful and beautiful ornaments because he understood what Christmas was about. And so the backstory is that he was born around 1940 and into a Catholic family. The revolution, the Communist Revolution, happened in 1949, but there were, at the time of the revolution, about 5 million Catholics. So my character has been raised in a Catholic family, and as a little boy, he knows the sights, sounds, and smells of Christmas. So as children do, they cherish the memory of their childhood Christmases, and it's all wrapped up with themes of family and peace and the Christ child and security and happiness. So those are all the things that he carries with him. And my character has, his family did not survive the revolution, and so he lives on and then at some point becomes an artist in one of the shops that manufactures glass ornaments. And so during his times of painting, there are times of persecution against Christians. Nevertheless, they're still producing some of these ornaments. And when he starts off during the Cultural Revolution, he does a very perfunctory type of manger scene. But then as time goes on and the churches emerge, he taps into his older memories of Christmas and can bring out the warmth and the beauty of the season and paints that onto his ornaments. And so then there are little side stories. One of the things he does is he has always carried a little replica of a Christ child in his pocket. Yeah. And it's, to me, it's sort of a natural thing because we're Catholics and we love sacramentals, and sometimes we clutch onto a sacramental, something that reminds us of God and gives us a sense of security. So my Jian holds his little Christ child in his pocket. And sometimes he's brave about talking about his faith, and sometimes he's not so brave. But nevertheless, he never gives up this the basic faith. And he shares this little sacramental with other people, too, when they need times of courage and hope. So those are just little incidental things. And then as the story unfolds, or my character's life unfolds, he finds it's another Christmas, it's approaching, and he has a very heartfelt talk with one of his friends, who is also the supervisor of the Christmas ornament floor, and he explains to him what Christmas is to him. And his friend, Renshu, is very respectful and takes mm-hmm. it in, but, and just meditates on it, and then you have to read the rest of the story.
Yes, which is well worth it.
Yeah, good. Well, thank you. I hope so. I'm not sure how easily, a child would read this, so I do hope parents read it first or read it along with their children. I love the pictures that were done by Gwyneth Thompson Briggs.
About that, do you know what her inspiration was for the beautiful art she did?
Well, she's, first of all, a classically trained artist. You can go to her website, and her name is, it's a mouthful, Gwyneth, G-W-Y-N-E-T-H, Thompson Briggs. You can Google that, and you will find yourself at her website at some point, and she has her beautiful artwork. And it's oil paintings and in a very classical tradition. She likes to try different things, and this is a pen and graphite, or watercolor and graphite illustration, what she did for the book. She's a friend of mine, and I had asked her to do a picture because I thought, I have a book that is kind of a strange concept for Christmas, and I thought if I could put a picture with it, then it would be an easier sell. And I think that, some stories, you don't need that. You can imagine the picture, so the pictures are great with it. But others, I think you need to capture something. And I think she was able to do that. She was able to capture the charm of something very foreign to all of us, and that would be Christmas in China.
I'm glad we got to talk about Gwyneth Thompson Briggs. I've loved her art for a few years now. She does some great work, so we'll put links up to the website, because she really does some fantastic, very subtle art at times, but they're just beautiful to look at.
Yeah. I wish there were more pictures. Of course, I always think that with every Christmas book I buy. I always, if I like the pictures, I want more.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is stunning. And I know with this book, among the folks who recommended it was Cardinal Zen of Hong Kong, who's the sixth Archbishop of Hong Kong. Do you have any clue how he got a hold of it and what the reception from folks in China has been?
I'm sure it was under the good auspices of Sarah Lemieux at Sophia Press that this book was given to him. And so I'm thrilled that he looked at it, and he says that it's a charming book, and it, makes you mindful that we must always turn to Christ. So I'm very happy with that, and I do hope other people, other nationalities pick it up too. China is so much in the news today, and I just keep thinking they need Christ. And how is that going to happen? I mean, it seems like an impossible situation to me. But at the same time, there's hope. And if, people like Cardinal Zen, people look to him for guidance and a sense of hope and a sense of purpose, stuff will happen.
Absolutely.
Somehow. Through the grace of God.
Now, and hope's a big theme of this book, which, my gosh, do we need more of?
Yeah, what I wanted to show was that hope can be contagious, And I don't really want to say that in a superficial way, but
sure.
It sounds like that. But poor Jean is, if you look at him, he doesn't have any great worldly achievements. He's just a retired factory worker, and no one would look at him and say that his faith had brought on anything great for him. And of course, you and I know that's correct. It's nice when you can be prosperous and be faithful, but that's not why we are faithful.
Sure.
Nevertheless, you know, poor Jean's his sincerity comes through, and people notice that he's happy. There's something settled and happy to him about him, and they like to talk to him. So I have the character at the end of the book, his friend, pick up on his sense of hope, and he realizes that hope, there's something youthful about it. His friend understands that his own youthful joy and hope is something that he could also possess. And so he finds that attractive, and he finds it gives him a different lift and a different feeling. And it's not a promise of success in this world, but it's a promise of being right with God.
Mm.
And so my character at the end understands hope, but then he knows I need to find the reasons for my hope. And it's almost putting the cart before the horse, but I do think that can happen in evangelization, where people find out that someone who's Christian is very hopeful. There's something joyful about them. They're looking forward to things, and they're not just looking forward to getting a better paycheck next month. But there's something that enriches their life and makes them feel satisfied, secure, and right with God. I think a lot of people are looking for that, though they don't know it. They don't know. They don't know how to put it into words.
That's a great way to put it. No, and people don't know how to put that into words because it's hard to even say what's missing. Because I know it, here in the West, when we are told we have something missing, the immediate solution is, well, what consumer good can we produce for you to buy then?
Right. Another thing I've always had in mind was that when I was writing this book, a lot of people rightfully talk about how consumerist Christmas is.
Mm.
And, yeah, I get that part. But then sometimes I think, but if you stop buying stuff, then they won't be making it in China. And what's going to happen, what's going to happen to that industry that's a little point of evangelization in that country? But, you know, well, what I find is if the malls are too consumerist for you, then don't go. Or you go once, you enjoy it, and that's it. Everybody has all sorts of different ways of decorating or accessorizing Christmas or celebrating with things, and that's fine. It doesn't have to be overdone.
What I was enjoying about this book, a lot of the Christmas books that we're especially covering on this podcast for adults or children focus almost entirely on the nativity, and obviously the nativities permeates everything in this book. What do you think it is about the nativity that artists and writers have been wanting to explore for over 2,000 years?
That's actually a beautiful question. And I would say the person who helped me focus on that as a question was Sir Kenneth Clark, you know, in his documentary on Western art, said that the very unique thing about art in Western civilization was that they painted a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And that had never, you know, the Greeks were not celebrating the baby. The Romans hadn't done it. But it worked in this whole Christian setting. So it is, of course, it's the whole story of the Nativity. But I have always thought, you know, of course, God understood how this would influence 20th century man, 21st century man, that this image of peace and solitude and protection and security, he knew how this would affect us. There's just something so beautiful about God coming, not just coming down to become man, but to choose a stable to be born in, and then revealing himself to shepherds, first of all. And I think ordinarily people think, yes, he revealed himself to shepherds because they're the humble folk, and Christ came, you know, for the humble, and then we have the Epiphany as well as the kings. But I also think he came to the shepherds because the shepherds of Bethlehem were in charge of the sacrificial lambs.
Mm.
And they knew what the unblemished lamb was. So I think there's much more to that story than most of us think about.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
Well, in fact, I've got a Christmas story I hope somebody will take on the sign of the shepherds. So that's for another time. But I just think, what a great sell, you know? And Hollywood has always known that's a good story. Everybody knows that's a good story. And, of course, you and I know it's not just a story.
Mm-hmm.
But it's historically our narrative. And I also like how C.S. Lewis puts it. He loved mythology. And he loved all the myths, loved them. And then when he was talking to J.R. Tolkien one time, Tolkien said, well, you know, Christianity has its story too. But it happens to be true. And so suddenly, you know, C.S. Lewis kind of recalibrated and rethought about this. Yeah, this is it's one of the best stories going. And and maybe it is true. So then, you know, and of course the rest is history.
Yeah, because once you consider it's true, your life has to change, and it changed in a big way with him.
Yeah. And good stories can be true. And that's why, in a way, he was surprised. Is that what he says, surprised by joy? I don't know if that's quite right. But, you know, this is such a joyful story. Too bad it's just a story. Well, what if it's not? You know, examine it again.
For the Christmas season, of course, there's endless resources. I love this book for also presenting Christmas in a place where it's actually, you know, somewhat outlawed, which doesn't make a lot of sense in our modern minds, but at the same time, even the great state of Massachusetts had outlawed Christmas, so we're not that far removed.
Oh. You mean in the 17th century?
The 17th into the 19th century, actually, but...
Really? Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know it was that long. I'm amused because there was a time when minced meat pies were outlawed in New England because they knew that if people were celebrating Christmas, they'd have to have their mincemeat pies, and there should be no celebration on that very solemn day. So some would recognize it as Christmas, but they would still go about their business, and they didn't like that celebratory fa-la-la stuff that the Church of England, bless them, had brought over, and also maybe less customary for Catholics at the time to celebrate in that high fashion. But yeah, that's a funny history. And over in China, the way I understand it, in some parts, more in the urban parts, they will decorate malls and things. And now it's almost as if in anticipation of the Chinese New Year.
Oh.
But they do, you know, they understand the concept of Christmas as a time of gift giving. So some people do give gifts at that time. It's not an official holiday, of course, by any means.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like that they have Christmas trees.
Yeah.
And, you know, they kind of like it. They like the visuals. It works for them, so I'm glad about that.
No, and the visuals are understandable. They can be a great, as you noted, they can be such a lovely way to evangelize and teach our faith, is using things like art or even these small glass decorations we put on a tree once a year can be a great teaching tool. What have been some teaching tools that you've used through Christmas and Advent besides this lovely book?
Oh, well, we always have the Advent wreath.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the biggest teaching tool we have is the calendar.
Yes.
And, you know, just we're sanctifying time. Each week goes by, we come closer and closer. We light the candles. We have a little reading at the lighting of the candles. Maybe we celebrate St. Nick's Day a little way, or St. Lucy's feast day. I don't go too crazy with all the different ways people celebrate Christmas, because
mm-hmm.
it's endless.
Oh, yes, it is.
You know, there's only so much that is useful and not overwhelming, because you still want that sense of anticipation and a little sense of waiting and a touch of a penitential waiting. So, in my household, when the children were little, during Advent, we'd have a little manger and a little box for a manger. And every time they did a good deed, they would get to put yarn into that box. And so that's a little different from Lent. With Lent, we would make sacrifices. With Advent, we'd be more conscientious about, showing kindness to others, or readily obeying mom, or, you know, whatever it takes to help form habits in them.
Absolutely. And our penultimate question, of course, you're not just this is your first book, and you're not just a writer. You do a lot of great work over at Catholic Media Apostolates. Of course. Can you tell us a little bit about your work there and where people can find it?
Well, you can go to CatholicMediaApostolate.com. And on our page, we have a couple of different podcasts, and two of the podcasts I do, one is on Catholic homeschooling, and the other is Catholic Senior. And we've got several podcasts for the Catholic homeschooling, and we're mm-hmm. beginning with Catholic Senior. And it's just topics of interest. That's all. Topics of interest. Catholic Media Apostolate tends to traditionalist, so we've mm-hmm. always promoted the old mass.
Perfect.
And that's always been our interest. And another magazine, we have a magazine too, The Traditionalist.
Advent is a time I really encourage people to try to find an old mass, even if you only go once. You don't have to commit to going each and every week if it's a little out of the way or whatever. But it's so lovely to see the way your ancestors worshiped for centuries, and in a way that's still ever new to you.
Right. And then there's the, what's the Mass to Our Lady on a lot of people, or a lot of parishes, well, not a lot of parishes, you will find in some regular parishes and with TLM groups, it's the early morning Rorate Mass.
Yes.
Have you ever been to one of those?
I went to one in Rome like 10 years ago. It's time for a new one.
Oh. What? Do you remember what church it was in?
Oh, it was the one created by the... I'm even spacing on the order all of a sudden, the Fraternity of St. Peter.
Okay. Oh, wow. You went there and they had the Rorate Mass. Was it at 6?
It was 6 in the morning. I only know that because I was maybe 23 or 24, and I always joke, 6 o'clock doesn't come twice a day. What are you talking about? But there I was.
Yeah. Well, good for you. But, of course, any of us who do make it to that early morning Mass, and the idea is that, if, for those who are not familiar with it, is that you go to Mass and it's in the dark. They don't turn lights on. They have lots of illumination with candles, and it's in honor of Our Lady, and it's during Advent. And I've seen it done on a couple of different Saturdays in Advent. I'm not sure what the most traditional Saturday is, but it is it's well worth going to and hauling your kids out of bed and you know, just see what it's like at 6 o'clock in the morning once in a while. Actually, I have to get up probably more like 5.
You do, but I especially love it with a religious or monastic community because they've been practicing that order of their day for so long, and you get to see the rhythm. And obviously, I could sell the Latin Mass to our listeners all day long, but I highly recommend it. Even if you only go once, like I say, you know, experience it just once is...
Well, what of course was so good about Benedict's motu proprio in 2007 was it lifted all liturgical boats. So I had a nephew who was in the seminary, the diocesan seminary in St. Louis, and his local parish said, hey, we want to do a Rorate Mass during Advent. Will you help us? Will you be the MC at that? And they did. It was not a TLM. It just was, you know, someone who was making sense out of his liturgical year and who thought this would be something beautiful to bring to the parishioners, and it was.
It absolutely, and I, God bless him and all other priests and seminarians for bringing those traditions to your regular everyday parish, because I love them.
Exactly. So, of course, we have a lot to pray for on that in that area, not just for our brothers and sisters in China, but perhaps the suppression of the Mass in this area, too. That seems odd to be talking about, but...
No, and that's the beauty of the Mass is it will baptize you and bury you, and sometimes that you means the empire or the powers that be, but...
I guess so.
But for this book, and if folks want to pick it up and also learn more about your work, where can they go?
Well, of course, to Sophia Press or SophiaInstitutePress.com, I think, and then you put in search Christmas Blossoms. That should get you where you need to go. My website is CatholicMediaApostolate.com. And
perfect.
I'm really interested in people's comments on the book, too. I would love to hear what people have to say. Of course, I really only want good things. But nevertheless, because I must say, when I ask people to read it, I give them all sorts of cautions. Now, you know, this has some difficult topics. One of the things I talk about is, barely, but is the... some of the people were being fined for having more than two children. At one time, there was a one-child policy. Then they raised it to a two-child policy. And people who couldn't pay the fines, who ended up with a third child, might have to give up their child. And I mean, this sounds so cruel, and it is cruel. But it's not a bad topic to discuss with your children, how easy it is for all the, you know, mandates to come from somebody's science of demographics, and suddenly you're supposed, you know, you're doing terrible things. But then the science changes, doesn't it?
Usually.
And yeah, and recently, in this past year, they have raised the limit to three children, and because they're finding out that the one- and two-child policies were disastrous.
Yeah, and just heartbreaking, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of heartbreaking stuff there, and very upsetting, frightening. But not to lose hope, and we shouldn't just, you know, blot out that area as godforsaken, because it's not.
No, and we talked about Cardinal Zen, but there's a lot of great Catholics who are holding the line as best they can out there.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Well, this is lovely. Priscilla, thank you so much. One, for writing this, finding a great artist to work with, and just printing out a story of hope and a little bit of light in this Christmas season, which is perfect for parents as they get through Advent. I know I've enjoyed the art and the story itself, and I think many parents listening today will enjoy it as well.
Good. Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate that. And if you can explain it to other people, you know, more power to you. That's terrific.
I hope we did.
That was, once more, Priscilla McCaffrey, one of the many authors I get to talk to on the show, but almost never get to talk to children's books, so thanks for letting me indulge in that a little bit this week. If you want to find Priscilla, go to sophiainstitute.com, where you can find Christmas Blossoms, or catholicmediaapostolate.com. That's her website. We'll put those links in the show notes. If you have any questions, editor@catholicexchange.com. Once again, I just want to thank you all for letting me talk about children's books for a little bit this week. We'll have some solo episodes, and I'll get back to the usual interviews in the new year. Thank you all. I hope your Advent is going well. God love you. Have a wonderful week.